step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then, Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now, Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Left Hand, Right Brain. I hope this podcast finds you well. And I know I say it every podcast, but I say it because I really mean it. For all your likes, your subscribes, your rates, and reviews, you know, I preach. And you know, if you like what you're hearing on this week's Left Hand Right Brain, you can check out all the podcasts under the LHRB banner by going to lefthandrightbrainpod.com. That's where you'll find links to all the podcasts like Los Chupacabros, Let's Get Drunk and Talk About Your Wedding, Help Me, I'm Scared with Katie Bowman, as well as the backlog of all the left-hand-right brains, the JDJOs, Appetites, anything LHRB-related you can find at lefthandrightbrainpod.com. And I'm excited to announce that I'll be performing at the Chief Bicycle and Comedy Festival that's in Trinidad, Colorado, May 6th through the 7th. It's a weekend of trains, bicycles, and laughs. And it's not just in Trinidad. There's also a portion of it that's going on in Raton, New Mexico. So if you want to catch a live hand right brain, which I suggest you do, that's going to be Friday, May 6th. That's going to be at 9 o'clock. I'm going to have special guests Jay Gillespie and Andreas Besserell. And I think we're going to do a cookie bracket. The cookie bracket, long-awaited cookie bracket I've been talking about on this podcast forever. We're actually going to get it done in Trinidad with LHRB All-Star Andreas Besserell and returning guest Jay Gillespie. And then on Saturday, May 7th, I'll be taking the train to Raton to do a couple comedy shows there with some big names like Amy Miller, Zach Moss, and Andreas will be there as well. So it's going to be a great time. For tickets and lodging information and all that jazz, go to thechieffestival.com. And this podcast is brought to you by the Vail Comedy Festival. That's right. Previous guest Mark Masters putting on the very first Vail Comedy Festival. That's going to be May 27th through the 29th. Memorial Day weekend in the beautiful Vail, Colorado, and they have confirmed headliners such as Mary Lynn Rice Cup, Caitlin Palufo, Usama Siddiqui, Steven Rogers, and Hazmin Garza. Those are the big five right there, plus many more. We got local comics, people flying in from all over the country. We got 30-plus comics, five venues, three crazy days of laughs. So for ticket prices and accommodations, you should check out vailcomedyfest.com. I know they have festival passes ranging from $175 all the way up to $1,000. Check it out. It's going to be a good time. Okay, and that brings me to this week's podcast, which is with Steve Vanderplug. He is the producer and host of the Rotating Tap comedy show, and that's combining all things beer and comedy. We get into how the craft beer industry and comedy are a lot alike in pairing up. Has led to a lot of success for Steve. You can check out rotatingtapcomedy.com to see when the next show is. So it's not just a show at one venue. It's like the name implies, there's rotating venues, rotating craft beer breweries here in town that he sets up different shows at. And it's constantly changing. You know, they go back to the same space from time to time. So definitely check out and see if your local brewery, your favorite local brewery, is doing a rotating tap show. Steve's really got a good thing going here producing shows. We get into how producing shows, you know, has a lot of value in the comedy scene, maybe possibly a little bit less than it used to. But now that Steve has cultivated a couple different ones and he's got a good machine running behind his production company, you know, he's got, he's selling tickets, you know, got a budget and all that jazz. You know, he's doing just fine. And then Steve and I even get into crushing some comedy beef that we had. You know, we butted heads early on in our comedy careers here in Denver. We started around the same time and, you know, just never really saw eye to eye. But coming back from the pandemic and everything, you know, we buried the hatchet and we get in a little bit into that in the podcast. We talk a lot about producing a good show, booking, you know, the headache that can be, the grind that producing a show is. I'll just let you listen to it. You know, I had a good time with Steve. Thanks for coming on. Be sure to check out A Rotating Tap Show if you can. Now let's get to this week's LHRB podcast, part of Left and Right Brain Productions. So how'd you get the Rotating Tap started? I know you started, the first show I remember you doing was the one at Chain Reaction.
Yeah.
And then did it start there? And then you were like, people are doing a bunch of brewery shows and this is how I want to pursue doing shows or anything like that? Or
yeah, I mean, Chain was successful enough that I thought, like, if I could do this elsewhere, like, I don't know, man, times were different back then too, where it was like running one show was enough to like be considered valuable in comedy.
That was like the currency we were all dealing with, stage time.
Yeah. And so if you had one show, that was huge back then. And then with time, like one show just wasn't enough. And so I was like, well, I might as well try this at a couple other breweries and see how it goes. I had the idea probably 6.5 years ago, about a year and a half after Chain, to like do like a summer series. But it was just, it was too much. It was in my mind too much. It was like not reasonable. It wasn't going to happen. And then I ended up getting fired from my day job. And I was like, well, now I have the time to try it. When I got fired, I had two more breweries on board at that point. So I was like, well, I might as well just like go with this and try and really get it going. And then after I got a couple more breweries, a few more joined on, and then it just kind of snowballed.
And then do you have like a sales pitch you give them? Did you have like a blueprint that you were working off of just out of curiosity? And like, was it easier to get in after, you know, some newbie comic really did a shit show there, you know, and you're like, hey, I can do this for better. And this is how.
I have not like at the beginning, but I have gotten, there's a dude from New York that he has a company that basically produces shows at breweries, distilleries and wineries across the country. He just rebranded, I saw. He's still doing it, but basically like he's put on a couple shows at breweries and they're shit and they're terrible. And I did one of the wineries for him, and I got there and they didn't even have a PA set up. It's supposed to be closing out, there's no PA, and then the people there were like, oh, he said he would take care of all of this.
Okay.
And so it's not like I'm like purposely going out and like poaching venues. But like the dude lives in New York, right? And it's like, why not have like a local company take on some of these breweries?
Yeah.
So I've snagged a couple that way. But yeah, I mean, at first it was like a pitch of like, oh, well, look at how successful Chain Reaction is. Look at all the people we're getting in here. I could do this for you too. And, trial and error, it's not always that easy at certain breweries. Some breweries it is. But yeah, I mean, I would pitch them Chain Reaction. And then once I ended up getting Flight Co. Emporium and then eventually Zuni Street on board. And once you get to like three breweries, then word gets out and other breweries kind of want to hop in. For the most part, I still reach out to a couple breweries here and there, but for the most part, they come
to you.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
There's like a cabal of breweries. They have meetings and they.
No. Well, the thing about beer, man, it's the whole, you know, had the podcast. I'll be bringing back the Rotating Tap podcast soon. It's basically just like the comedy industry, where it's technically, yeah, like we're all in competition with each other, but there's certain things that certain people do better, certain breweries make certain beers better, and collaboration is key, like working together. And you know, so in a way it's the same kind of network, like nationally, even globally, that we have too, where it's like if you were to go to Chicago and it's like, who do I know in Chicago to get shows, right? It's the same thing where it's like, if a brewer goes to Chicago, they're like, what brewery should I hit up? And then chances are they even know the people that brew when they just hang out and drink a bunch of beer together.
Right.
It's really, they're parallel industries.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. when I was saying like, oh, it's probably easier to show up once you're established, like Rotating Tap is, to go in to a brewery, like, or if they reach out to you and be like, oh yeah, that was a newer comic who didn't know. I wasn't trying to insinuate or anything about you like taking shows from anybody. I just thought like,
no,
it's like a good way to like,
no,
like,
totally. Hey,
yeah, this, I do this for this brewery and this could be for you guys, you know?
Yeah. Too. Well, and I mean, like, times are different now, right? And so it's like, I, you know, some people are like, well, I'm not going to approach this brewery just in case Steve does. It's like, I'm not.
Right,
like, go for it. I'm not going to be mad if you get a brewery that I didn't get. Like, whatever.
Plenty of breweries.
Yeah, exactly. Especially here.
Yeah,
especially here. It is interesting. Part of the thing is I did notice, like, 4 or 5 years ago that breweries were really becoming, like, the B clubs across the country.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that was, like, part of the idea, too, is, like, if breweries are going to be very common and popular nationally, not just in Denver, but for comedy shows, it's like, well, why don't we make this a thing? Because the thing is, breweries need special events to fill nights to get people in there, too.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all in competition with each other. They all want business. You know, a lot of them do trivia night. Some of them do, like, drag nights and stuff. So you know, it's convenient for them, too.
Hey, I just looked it up. There's 148 plus breweries just in Denver.
Just in Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably Denver County, but yeah, just in Denver. We are most microbreweries per capita in the state of Colorado as well.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
So no shortage of business on that front.
What do you think it is? Is it people just following their passions? Like, I love beer, so I want to make beer. Or they're like, there's not a beer out there. You know, they're trying to make the beer they don't see out there. What?
I think for the most part, it's passion, honestly. Okay, I'm sure there's a couple people, and, you know, especially like, hell, even sometimes it's like, you'd think that when somebody's like, there's a beer out there that's not being made, so I'm going to make it. And it's usually like something, you would think something crazy, like we're going to put oatmeal and cherries and chocolate into this
spicy
beer.
Beers are the things I've been seeing.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
been noticing lately.
No, I'm not a fan of chili beers.
Me either.
They're
not a big.
Yeah, it's a heartburn in a can, really. Heartburn in a glass.
What is it you like about beer specifically for you? Because it's always like too thick, it's too hot. I'd rather go for a spirit if I'm going to do it. But what do you pitch some beer for yourself?
I don't know, man. You know, it varies on styles too. Some beers I can't stand. Mm, but for the most part, I guess I don't really like most spirits. Whiskey's terrible for me.
Interesting.
If
mentally or you just don't like the taste or.
Both.
I think you got to learn to like any of it.
I like some whiskeys. Some whiskeys I think are like, there's a difference between like, I don't know. I like Irish whiskeys.
Okay.
But also they're not good for me mentally. I go crazy.
Sure.
If I'm going to drink a spirit, like my go-to like mixed drink is a Moscow Mule.
Okay.
Something light
and
easy.
Yeah. Vodka.
Yeah.
That's my go-to.
But I can't do vodka straight. Mm. I can't shoot vodka. Yeah, I can shoot tequila. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
But that's really about it. Clear alcohols.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I think beer, you know, there's so many different cultures built around drinking. Beer, to me, I love the flavor of most of them. It's just kind of my drink of choice between, you know, I honestly, I'm kind of getting into wine a bit.
Interesting.
Red wines specifically.
The palate's evolving.
I mean, I've always liked wine.
Okay.
But I guess I never was.
I guess you think of it as more of like a evolved palate likes wine.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, maybe that's bullshit. But
I think maybe when I was like 21, 22, I wasn't able to afford good wine.
Sure.
Yeah. Just a lot of, a lot of that kangaroo with the foot.
Yeah. Yeah. The California or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Vanderplug, what kind of last name is that? Just out of curiosity.
Dutch. Very Dutch.
Gotcha,
yeah.
Gotcha.
One of the first bits I ever wrote in comedy was Dutch as fuck. There was no real punchline to it. That was just kind of the, I'm Dutch as fuck.
Yeah.
It's like my tagline. It was bad. It's pretty
and
dumb.
When you're talking about way back in the day, you're talking like what, 2016, 2018-ish?
I started comedy in 2012.
I just pulled up this article about you. It's pretty cool.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Yeah.
Voyage Denver.
Yeah. They. So basically, do you know how this works? Voyage Denver?
No.
I can put you in contact, basically.
It's, oh, okay.
it looks awesome, right? It looks like this big deal. But all it is it's, I mean, kind of like a chain of like, once they interview you, they're like, who's the five people you want to see interviewed? And then you give them five names and emails, and then they'll hit up those people, and then they'll get interviewed pretty much no matter what.
So it's like it's a blog?
Yeah.
A blog.
Yeah,
a blog, not a vlog.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, I'm sure they have a couple of video components, but
sure.
Yeah, they just, it's like, here's five people that I would suggest, and then they reach out to those five people.
Westword and podcasts work, you know?
Yeah.
I just got on a podcast called Hosted, where they interview people who host podcasts.
Really?
Yeah, and I was suggested by another guy who just did it, you know, so.
That's pretty fun, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's all networking.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks great on screen. I mean, I hope this is in your resume.
I do have
a link to it.
I have it linked on my website, at least. Or at least Rotate Tap website.
Gotcha.
Because that's the thing. It's like, it's not like I'm like trying to trick people into thinking it, but that's kind of the point of it, right? It's like, look how
putting
awesome
your best
this
foot
looks.
Forward. Yeah. There's no trick. I mean, they could see it. They can look at it.
Right.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of resume stuff, and a lot of it is just like spinning things in a positive way. Yeah.
Well, then like how many comics do you know that are like, oh, I've headlined this club that nobody's heard of, or I've headlined this festival that's in somebody's backyard, right? Like, you know, it's spinning it. And there's, you know, there's people too that have like minor acting credit, like very minor, like maybe even a line on something deep down in Netflix, right? And then that's like, well, I was on Netflix. That's, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. And it's like, you got to take what you have, yeah. Right?
So for the listener, what is Rotating Tap, if you can explain it for them?
Rotating Tap is all things beer and comedy. So it's a series of live comedy shows that take place at breweries. There's also a podcast component of it too, where I'll be pairing comedians with brewers, taproom managers, owners, and having the comedian interview them about beer.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And that's rotating. Well, I get that. I mean, that's a fun.
Yeah. So it goes around, and then, hopefully by early summer this year, there will also be a comedian guided brewery tour along Tennyson Street.
That's what I'm working interesting, on. Interesting. So yeah, Tennyson's great.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's a bunch of breweries right there. Four of the five want in to do it. I just haven't talked to them since, you know, the colder months. But hopefully that gets going. So really it's all things. It's, you know, there's plenty of room to grow, but in every way that I can put the craft beer industry and the comedy industry together, because they are so similar, as I'm going to do that, like just as much as possible.
Yeah, dang.
Yeah.
I guess I never really thought of them as super parallel. I knew like we were both using each other, you know, to get comedy shows there, and they're trying to sell drinks. So,
but like, I mean, a lot of comedians love beer, and then a lot of brewers love comedy. It's surprising how many brewers or just beer industry people actually really go to stand up on a regular basis. Hmm. And a lot of times they'll like argue to like work the events, even though they're working. It's like, by the fourth comic, nobody's really ordering that many beers anymore, so they can kind of like sit and watch the show, and it's like a great night at work for them, you know.
Yeah. I was just on a show at someplace else brewing on. Great. I mean, it was packed in there.
Yeah,
there was a birthday you had to address right away,
right? Yeah.
And they're like, sing happy birthday, and you're like, okay, we're gonna do this one really quick thing.
Yeah.
And then you handled it very well, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind. Like, the thing is like, it with breweries, there's a lot of regulars and people that are there all the time.
Yeah,
and it's
their
like
neighborhood bar.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not trying to come into your space and tell you how to do things. You know what I mean?
Very
like,
respectful. Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah. I mean, it's a good mentality to bring into it.
And, you know, people can enjoy their birthdays however they want. Sure. And if they want to go to a comedy show, and as long as they're not heckling, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I thought that was like, oh, shit, is it going to be like a crazy one?
Yeah.
But it was handled well, and I think they got it, and they respected it.
I mean, also, you know, there's the club scene has some birthday issues for sure, but it's typically like when there's problems, it's typically like people that are turning something in their 20s, right?
Right.
Because they just want all the attention on them. Once you get to a certain age, it's like, I don't even want people knowing it's my birthday, right?
Yeah.
How old are you? I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. They're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
It's almost fighting words at that point. At a certain at a brewery. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's cool. I mean, it was packed out is what I was getting at. So, I mean, that has to feel good. I mean, you're doing that. You're making money. Just for like, you know, we don't have to get into certain numbers or anything, but is it, do you still get intimidated going to a brewery and being like, hey, this is a business proposition for you, or like asking for money? Because I think you, out of all the shows I've done recently, you pay the best. So, I mean, I think there's something there.
I want to, I mean, that's the thing is like, I want to pay comics because I've gone through the struggle too. Like I, you know, it's, you know, clubs in Denver don't really pay anything, if at all, you know? And it's like, I want to be a better option for people and help them grow and help them make some money. Some breweries are all about it. Some breweries will offer more than what I ask, and some won't come close to it. There's a brewery that's doing an anniversary party that I've never worked with, but they hit me up and they're like, hey, we'd like to have you. And I was like, okay, well, these are, you know, these are the different payment options. Oh, we can okay. go one of three ways or one of two ways or be in the middle somewhere. And they just never responded. And I'm assuming it's because they don't want to put money into it. Not, they don't necessarily have to, but some people just don't want to see us make money. Some breweries don't. And it's,
yeah.
Or they don't understand, maybe. But it's like, I'm not, we've got to make money. I've got to pay my talent. Like,
yeah, yeah. It's got to be worth it for you.
Yeah. It's got to be worth it for everybody, because I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to do comedy for free, produce for free, especially, dude. Right. Producing, I'll be honest, producing sucks.
It's a grind.
It's
right?
a nightmare. Yeah. It's, I wish that I could just do stand up full time, but it's so hard to do that. You got to have so many credits to do that, right?
Yeah.
You got to have one line on a Netflix show at some point and then be like, I was on Netflix. So, yeah, I mean, it's an absolute grind. So it's like, I'm not going to do this for free. I'm not going to bring in business to these breweries and make some of them make so much money. Like they've talked numbers with me. There's a brewery that told me, they're like, our Monday or our Wednesday nights are usually like $300, and the nights that you're here, we make 3,000.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's, that it's is like, a huge jump.
Yeah, absolutely. And so at that point it's like undeniable that like,
yeah, yeah,
I deserve to be getting,
yeah, it should feel good
money for everybody. Right. Uh-huh. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's great that you want to pay people. I think it shows that, you know, you came from the being a comic, you know.
Yeah.
We both started around the same time. I think you were doing it a little bit earlier than me. I started, well, 2013, 2014, really.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So we've been seeing each other around for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, in this article, I was saying that you had stage fright at the beginning. You think you're over that now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there's, like, certain shows that'll still stress me out from time to time. But like until I know what it is, not really. Right. Shows with new material always make me a little nervous. But dude, I mean, like I was definitely in that percentile of like public speaking is my greatest fear. Mm. And so I would just get hammered to go up there, just trashed and barely remember any of it, but I knew that it was fun, so I just kept doing it. Public speaking is like such a weird thing at first. And then once you're used to it, it doesn't really bother you so much anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Once you've lost all your dignity and
yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when I first started, they were trying to get like a little comedy union going with like, oh, this is how much we should be charging for open mics, and they wanted it to be like more open about like $100 an open mic to host an open mic.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get everyone to do that the same way. Do you think it would behoove the comedy scene in general if people got on board with a certain number for like showcases?
I mean, yes and no, right? Like it depends on the quality, I think, too. Like if you are putting together shit lineups, you probably shouldn't be making the same as everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. Not to say that like people don't deserve opportunities, because they absolutely do, but the thing that people have to remember too is like this is on the venue too. Like the venue's also a business, just like every comic is an individual business, but then every venue is a business too, and they need to make money. And if they're losing money, like so many comics don't buy drinks at open mics.
Yeah, a lot of them are sober. A lot of them don't have money.
Yeah, usually the money thing.
Yeah, yeah, there's that.
Because you know people don't pay, but it's weird because I don't know. I just lost my track of thought there. I don't think that every production should be paid the same, but I do think that people should demand a certain amount of money, I guess, minimum. But the way that that works is like, I won't name names because it's not that I care. I'm just not trying to throw anybody under the bus.
Sure,
but
sure.
There's a comic who the same venue hit us up and they quoted him a lower price. And so they went with them. And it's like, I get that. That's fine.
Right.
You know, I think that can be a little damaging to the scene in general. But at the same time, it works for them. So what am I going to get upset about? You know, like,
sure.
So, you know, it's a double-edged sword where like, yeah, it could, but that could also definitely like mess some stuff up too. Because I don't know, it's weird. There is a little bit of a pecking order,
yeah,
in terms of producing as well.
Yeah, and then that's all up in the air now too. I feel like after COVID, I mean, what do you consider like a good lineup or like a good show? A certain caliber of comedian, or just out of curiosity, like what do you think of when you think about putting together a good lineup?
Yeah, I think, well, I think location's important too, right? Like I produce some shows out in the suburbs, like the deep suburbs, where it's very conservative.
Okay.
And so, you know, I can't have super left-wing comics talking up on the stage about how they fucking hate the police and they want to.
I did say fuck the police on my last set, and I did feel everyone tighten up.
It's weird, right? But like, yeah. I, you know, you're good enough that like you can handle it and you can dig out of your grave.
And, I didn't. Yeah, I was like, okay, I did put myself in a hole. Not realizing it.
Yeah, no, totally. But like, you also know how to get out of the hole, and you know, sometimes it's just it's a matter of that. You know, if it's like a really super strong headliner, like give some newer comics a chance. Or, I don't know, just people I trust to do a good job.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting.
It's a lot of judgment, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, you're judging these people. You going out to mics, you feel like you have to be out there in the scene more to, like, see the new talent or anything like that? Or
I've been doing it a little bit. Open mics...
Yeah, they're a grind, too.
They're a grind, too, and it's like, just because it's a mic doesn't mean that, like, a good person doesn't have a bad set or a bad person doesn't have a great set. And, you know, any given night, anything can happen. And that's kind of the thing is like open mics are for building consistency. Right. And so, you know, you see people that do the same jokes at open mics for 2 years and it gets so hard to watch. And sure. It's so like it's like so many comics will walk out of the room because they already know what set they're going to do. But on the other hand, that comic is building consistency in every little word and every little movement that they do. And that's the point of open mics is to like figure that out and hone that in.
Yeah. I also try new material. I mean, I don't know. There's, you know, it's a balancing act.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Trying new material is like, you know, you have to do that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you find do you have like a percentage wise of like, okay, I have to have this many percentage new jokes or just sharpening the sword kind of a thing with the sets?
I don't know. I get, you know, sometimes I go through writer's block. I try to throw in a couple minutes of new stuff here and there, like, you know, maybe not brand new stuff, but like recent stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff that I don't tell a lot just to like kind of hone it in. But you don't want that to be the majority of your set. At least I don't. I don't want that to be maybe the most I would do would be half, like 50-50 new stuff.
Even at like Lion's Lair or, you know.
Oh, at like a Lion's Lair. Oh, no, I would probably try and do 80% new stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. Why is that different?
Because people want to watch comedy at other venues.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Lion's Lair, you know, it's usually open mics. The hardest thing about open mic is the anxiety that other comics have. The good comics have this anxiety of what they're going to do when they get up there, how it's going to go. So they're in their head and they're not paying attention to the show for their own personal reasons, which I totally get. The other hand of that is comics like to talk at open mics, and it's like, I get that it's social and stuff, but boy, did I start getting better at comedy when I started to watch everybody.
Interesting.
And that's a thing. There's, you know, I post a lot on Facebook about comics shutting up at shows.
Yeah. I remember that being a big thing when we first started. I remember you being very vocal about like, hey, shut up and watch these people. And like, you should be like, now, respecting comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that some people, it's their social hour and all this other stuff. At mics, it doesn't bother me as much anymore because I'm not at them. Okay. But no matter what, the less talking at any comedy show, which is why they enforce this clubs, it's like, don't talk so the comic can do their thing. But at open mics and at showcases, comics are usually the ones that ruin it. And it's like... yeah. And that's part of the frustration about producing is like getting comics to stop talking. And I'm not the only producer that feels this way. And I know there's a lot of people that like talk shit about it. That's like, Steve's kind of a Nazi about like not talking at the show. It's like, yeah, because you're the one that's going to ruin it. Right. Like my job as a producer is to get butts in seats. That's my job. Don't come do my show. Like, you're on stage for, I don't know, let's say 15 minutes, but there's still another hour and 15 minutes of the show that you need to be professional and just not talk during it or go to a different room.
Right.
Because it spreads like wildfire. even if it's a whisper, but like the pss, 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 like you can hear that so well at shows sometimes, especially like depending on the act, right? Like if they're yelling and stuff, it's like not a huge deal, but some comics are really quiet.
Right.
Like Phil Corridor, for example, is just the softest voice.
Yeah.
And that's his style, but it's like if another person is whispering during that, everybody's going to be able to hear it, or at least the people directly around them. And if they start whispering, then it just spreads, you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you think watching it shows is better, or watching it open mics? Which made you better? Because you're saying when you started watching, you got better
shows.
At comedy.
Okay. Shows for sure.
Because people are doing their best shit.
Yeah.
And they're like on.
They're on, exactly. They're on. They're doing their best stuff usually because there's an actual audience. Also, it's like part of the thing about comedy is like learning how to interact and or like control the audience flow. And you can't do that when the audience is all just talking to each other, right? Yeah. So, but I mean, then too, like, I think a lot of comics could take a lot from watching open mic sets also, right? Like, there are things that other people do that it's like, this is like an interesting method that you used for this situation. Yeah. But I mean, you know, open mics are open mics. The thing is like I've gone to the Wide Right mic a couple times recently, and it's chaos in there. But that's also a mic, like, the way that it's designed seems like it's really more of a hangout than a mic. It's less about stage time and more about like just shooting the shit. Whereas like Scruffy Murphy's has a side room where it's like, if you want to talk, you should go in the side room and talk, right? Like, don't disrupt the show. If you want to watch the show, watch the show. But if it's one room, I kind of get it. But if it's two, it's like, just go to the other room.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not hard.
It is nice when there's another room.
Yeah.
And I've heard plenty of people on this podcast talk about how like Wide Right is a hard room to do because it's all one room and everyone's just talking. So it's hard to like get everyone to pay attention.
Yeah. The last few times I've been there, I was like, I'm not going to bother going up because people just want to hang out and chat. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, especially after COVID, I mean, everyone wanted to get together and just be. So totally. Maybe we're indulging a little bit in that, you know, as a scene in general, a little more of a.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's like one of those things where it's like, I'm sure that I could be a little lighter on like mics and stuff about like caring about that. But for my own shows specifically, it's like, just don't talk during them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do that with other shows too. Like some shows I'll be in the back watching and the comic will come up. You know what it usually is too? It's always a comic thinking that they're better than the comic on stage. It's always like, well, this would be my punchline for that setup.
Oh, interesting.
Or did you hear that this comic did that? And it's like, this could be talked about in an hour and a half. We could talk about this all you want in an hour and a half. Like,
it's not right now.
Yeah. It's like, why does this have to be talked about right now? And some comics don't get it. Like, I will nod my head. And they'll just keep talking to me and then I'll just walk away. And then they're just like, what the fuck? And it's like, I am not trying to be rude, right? Like, but they might not realize that talking during somebody else's set is rude.
Right.
And I think people, they just don't realize that it's rude, but it is.
So what are all the breweries that you have shows at right now currently?
It rotates a lot, and then some of them are like summertime only because they have room outdoors but not in. So obviously Chain Reaction. It's been a minute since we've been in Flyco, but we still intend to go back. They're opening a second location soon.
Cool.
Which is very exciting. They bought the old Stapleton Tower, Central Park.
Oh, yeah, because it's not called Stapleton anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was the Stapleton Airport.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the control tower. So they bought that. Punchbowl Social was in there.
Right, yeah, I do remember that.
We're back at Emporium. Probably going to go back to Zuni Street over the summer. It's a lot, man. It's like 20 that it rotates through consistently. Something Brewing up in Brighton, Living the Dream down in Littleton. We're doing our first show at Coal Mine Avenue at the end of the month. Jade Mountain, which is a really cool brewery out in Aurora. They're pretty new, but they're awesome. I feel like anybody that I don't give a shout out to is going to listen to this and be like, what the fuck?
No, I know. But, you said you got a lot. You know, yeah,
it's
all right.
It's a lot.
Is there anything you see like with breweries? Like what makes a better show there? Is it like, do you find like a lower ceiling or like, you know, is there any like...
You know, the thing is we know that a lower ceiling... Right, like
traps
that's
the laughter,
traps the sound, right? Like that's why Comedy Works downtown is so great. but I'm not sure that that's as important as people make it to be, right? Like, it helps, but I feel like if you get like your ceiling gets to a certain height, it just quits mattering above that height. Because we do the outdoor show at Something Brewing, and it is incredible. It's probably my favorite show that I run. And the audience is amazing. They laugh real hard. You can hear it, and there's literally no ceiling. So I'm not sure that that is as important as people make it out to be. Separate rooms help the most. Mm. Just having a separate room. Or the brewery saying, like, it's ticketed, right? If it's one room, like Chain Reaction, we do ticketed now, which avoids people like going and just talking in the back because they put money into it or whatever reason.
Yeah. They're invested.
Yeah, they're invested, I think. Yeah, I'm not sure the ceiling thing matters. Lighting matters.
Okay.
Lighting for sure matters, and sound matters in terms of like just having a good speaker system.
And you invest in all that stuff and you just take it from venue to venue? Or?
Yep. Yeah, nice. Exactly.
Yeah. What kind of system, just for the
audio
heads out there?
Yeah, so I use a Gemini PA300, I think is the title of it. I have two of them. They can link together for like the really, really big shows, which is nice. yeah. So one of them is portable too. The second one I got, I decided to invest in a portable one. You can see they're this not one? The two towers on the left, the two standing towers all the way on the left. Yeah, those guys.
Interesting.
So, and they're really easy to move around.
Sleek.
Yeah. They're powerful. They sound great. And a lot of the reason I wanted to go with this is because the setup is super easy and I can't be at my show every time. And the less that somebody filling in for me has to do, the better I feel about it. Because the PA system that I was using is like a couple stands, a couple boxes, a bunch of cords. Everything's got to be connected right. Everything's got to be angled certain ways. And it's just a lot of work for somebody that isn't running stuff to have to do. I just felt bad. It's like, might as well get these.
So you have two of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's dope. Yeah, it's a sick setup.
Yeah, they link together. You know who helps me out with all the sound stuff is the one and only John Hamm. He's a live loop. He does a lot of stuff at Call to Arms with Katie and Brad.
Okay.
And he'll do some stuff at Rotating Tap.
I know you're talking about.
Yeah, he's a one-man looping band. Love cool. The dude. He's the best. Yeah. And so he'll tell me like what sound equipment he's using and stuff.
Cool.
John Hamm is like one of my favorite people because he used to work in the beer in the brewery. And then the brewery one day, he was working with Corey Healy, comedian Corey Healy.
Yeah.
And then one day he shows up to work and they're just like, everybody's fired. Sorry. Like,
shit.
Go home. And then when John got fired, it was similar to me where it's like, I guess I'm going to take the leap and just try it and do this full time and see how it goes. And he was until the pandemic, and he's getting back into it again. He just announced today he's got two residencies over the summer. Ooh. Playing music every Friday and Saturday.
Sick. Which, yeah,
he's great. And he's so talented at music. Hmm. So he tells me what he uses, and I go from there.
Right on. And you're doing this full-time? You're, like, producing full-time?
Not quite. I have a part-time job at a brewery right now, but it sounds like I might be moving to Westminster soon.
Oh.
And the brewery is south, so I don't know how reasonable that'll be.
Right. But like the bulk of your, I mean, you're paying some bills with the shows and stuff. That's pretty sick.
A little bit, yeah. Not as much as you would think.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
You take what you can get. It feels good.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. No, I mean it's so much work.
Right.
And the hardest part really is dealing with comics, but.
What do you think could make that easier? What's like your tip for comics to be like easy to work with? People remember you and they want to book you again.
If I could do one, it would be the don't talk during the show.
Okay.
That makes it the easiest. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of egos and stuff happens and I don't know. It's hard to say. But
like, I don't want to be booked with this other person or
a little bit of that. Ooh, and sometimes that's super reasonable though. Right. Like, there's been situations where it's like, there were accusations against this person that I didn't know of. And then somebody was like, hey, I just don't feel comfortable being on a show with this person.
Yeah.
And it's totally understandable, right?
Mm-hmm. I've dealt with that when I did Comedy Save the Video Star.
Yeah.
Yeah, people saying like, hey, I don't want to do that.
Right. And it's like, I completely understand. The last thing I'm trying to do is make anybody uncomfortable.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. So that's a situation where it's like, totally. Sometimes people bail 40 minutes before the show and it's like, yeah, but I have you filling That's time, right. you yeah. know? But shit happens, you know, whatever. I don't think that it's anything different than any other. Treat every show. I guess I would say treat every show like you do at Comedy Works, new talent, right? Like if you like new talents, like get here by 7:30, let us know if there's anything else that you have going on and it's fine. The best thing for out of town comics would be like, don't book a bunch of shows in the same night. That's a lot of it too, is like, I'll book somebody from Cincinnati and they'll be like, okay, well I have a show before and after, so can I go up in this middle spot?
Yeah.
And it's like, you're supposed to headline this. you're supposed to be closing it out. And they're like, well, I'll do the time just in the middle. And I'm like, I'm not going to.
Yeah. What?
I'm not going to have a 10 minute spot after you. That's so rude.
Yeah. That'd be a rough one.
Yeah. You're not running any shows right now, are you?
No, nothing going on.
Yeah. Are you ever going to bring back Video Killed the Radio Star?
Well, the thing is that I need a projector. I sent a message to Jim a while ago now about starting it up again, but never heard anything back. But I know they're going through some stuff with one of the other co-owners is having some health issues and stuff, and they're opening their thing in Trinidad. Well, it's open now, but when I messaged them, they were just
another plate. Yeah,
might have to reach out again, but I need a projector. You know,
gotcha. That's
just the biggest barrier to entry.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're getting cheaper and cheaper. I'll have to check out, like, a pawn shop or something.
Sure.
Even like a $100 one on
You're not far from Target. Colfax here.
There's plenty. So I got nothing going. Oh, yeah, but what I was getting at is, when I was doing my show, I mean, I got messages from a couple people being like, oh, why aren't there more women on this show? Or this is all white dudes. You know, do you take that in consideration? Is there anything that, I mean, I know there's not, like, a graph, like, you know, two lesbians equals one Hispanic.
Right. Totally. I want a diverse lineup because my audiences are diverse.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And so it's like, however, you know, it's not always exactly what I want.
Sure.
Ideally, you know, it's weird too, coming from like the straight white man perspective too, where it's like, it's hard for me to say anything. Right. And that's fine. Times have changed. My opinion isn't as important anymore, and that's great, right? Like, so it doesn't need to be. But it's also like, one thing that I find weird is I'll see people bash shows that are like, oh, there's no women on this lineup, right? But then they never celebrate a guy who books all women. In fact, it's almost worse if the host is a white man, even though he booked all these women, people still complain about it. And it's like, I don't understand that. Right. Like I will say too, like some of this fight for diversity, I don't think is like completely fair. I think that specifically in Denver, there are a lot of women that are booked more than some of the black men in town. Derek Rush is one of the fucking funniest people I know. And he's so rarely booked. And I don't understand that. I just, you know, and I don't think that anybody dislikes him, or I don't think he did anything wrong. Maybe he did, and I don't know about it.
As of this recording, there's nothing we've heard about this man.
And so it's weird where it's like, you know, people will complain about something where it's like, but like Derek never goes online and bashes anything, and he just goes on stage and crushes. And I think that behavior should be rewarded.
Yeah, more than the squeaky wheel kind of a thing.
Yeah, more than like bashing the one thing that people don't like. It's like, look at people like Derek and how they're doing it, and he's doing it right, and he's so fucking good on stage, but he's not getting booked, and he's not online saying he doesn't get booked.
I mean, that's fucking, I remember talking to Byron Graham a while ago, and something he said, he's the one who told me, I heard that phrase from the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of a thing. And you know, it's like, man, sometimes I never think of Derek either. When I do see him, I agree. He's like super funny. He crushes. But just so you know, when you're out of sight, out of mind kind of a thing.
Totally.
And that's like, that sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
It's a shame that that's how it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, as a white dude, my opinion matters less. And all that means that if people, some people don't think that's true, But like as a white dude, most white dudes are just going to be like, well, then I'll just be louder. And it's like, then don't do that. Like there's a time to shut up and listen. And I think that time is now. But that doesn't mean that I'm not allowed to have an opinion on that kind of stuff.
Sure, sure.
I also don't release my lineups really until the day before usually.
Gotcha.
And so it would be, I think a lot of the times the target is like, well, I saw this poster for a show in 3 weeks. Let's get it. Right. Yeah, let's go to their producer and tell them what's up. And I think partially that the day of helps people not come after you. But also, I can't tell you the last time I didn't have at least a woman or a person of color in some sense. Right. Like,
yeah.
On the show. So it's kind of like whatever. But that's because I want, again, like I want my audience to be happy. Right. Sure. I'm not booking diversity for the sake of booking diversity. I wouldn't book all white men for the sake of booking all white men either. It's just, I want my audience to be happy. That's the thing is, if I was booking like a fucking frat party, it's probably going to be a bunch of white dudes, right? Because yeah. that's what relates to them. But I mean, I don't know. People should be booking diversity for sure. Absolutely. Like way more. I find that some of the stuff is lost in the argument there where it's like, yeah, I know we want certain things and you can go after somebody for doing the wrong thing. But when are you ever supporting the right thing? And when are you like looking around you to see what else is going on? Again, dude, Derek is there. And there's a bunch of people like Derek where it's like,
yeah,
they're funny as hell. Rick Ryan is another guy that people just don't fuck with. And it's like, they're both fucking funny and professional. Right. That's the other thing. It's like, as a producer, they show up on time. They do their job. They don't make a scene. Great. That's all I need. Right.
Yeah.
I've never been on that end of like, well, you need to be booking differently. I've been on the end of like, you shouldn't book this one specific person here and there, which is a different situation. But it's weird when that happens and then nobody celebrates the victories that they have too.
Sure. Right? Yeah. That's an interesting point. Yeah. And I wasn't trying to get to like a gotcha or anything. I was just trying to get the, I think it's an interesting perspective and, you book a lot of things. So
no, totally. It's one of those things where it's like, it needs to be talked about for everybody. Right.
Right.
People should book diversity. Also be paying attention to when diversity lineups, if you're going to trash non-diverse lineups, then you need to celebrate super diverse lineups.
Good point.
And if it's somewhere in the middle, then who gives a shit, right? Like, that's the way it should be, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I had the last guest I had on did talk a little bit about, people book their friends a lot. Like, and funny isn't paramount. Is that something you think about more than, I need to book funny over anything else?
Yeah,
is that like
absolutely.
Rule of thumb?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. Because the lineup would be the same every time. I only have a handful of friends. Like,
gotcha.
There's a lot of acquaintances, right?
Sure.
And it's also weird too. Comedy is such a weird community where it's like, if I'm in Denver, I have my friends that are not comics and I have my friends that are comics that I hang out with on a regular basis. But then if I'm like in another city, say like on a festival with a comic from Denver, I'll be like, this is my friend who I never hang out with at home, we're in Des Moines right now. So we're friends, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that for the most part, like, I don't know, it's weird because when I started comedy and you were getting your foot in the door for sure when it kind of started to fall apart. But back in the day, like the comedy scene as a community was tight knit as fuck. Everybody hung out with each other all the time. And then as it expanded, and I struggled with this for sure, but as it expanded, it became much more clicky, right? And so clicks here, clicks there. Somebody has drama with one person, they go form a new click and all this stuff. And that was really hard for me. Because I part of the reason I fell in love with comedy was that everybody was so cool to each other, and that just doesn't exist now. But yeah, I mean, if you only book your click, it's gonna get so old so fast.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think audiences notice that? I mean, the people that come to your shows, or is it just other comedians that aren't getting booked on your shows that are complaining?
I think honestly, part of the thing is that people come back because it's fresh every time.
Okay.
If it's the same person, and even as a super experienced comic, it's hard to write shit 5 minutes in a month, right? New 5 minutes in a month, that's hard. And so if you're doing 10 minute sets every month and only half of it's new, people are going to get sick of it, right? So it's like, you got to change it up and have new people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do see that, and I see it happening, but also my opinion of it too is like, if you have a problem with it, then do it yourself.
Yeah, go create your own thing.
Yeah.
I think, like, a lot of the kids are trying to do that. The new kids are all, I mean, there's a lot of shows popping up.
Absolutely.
A lot of things
doing. And I, you know, that was part of the reason I started rotating to app is like, if I'm unhappy with even just this, solely just the amount I'm booked, then I might as well be booking myself more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you look at like what Ben Bryant's done with the undergrad, and it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. Right. Like, he wasn't happy with the way certain venues in Denver were doing, and he's like, well, then I'll do it my way, and he's crushing it, right?
I never see him around anymore. He's just like, I got a successful thing, I'm gonna be over here doing my thing.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, I don't go to mics as much as I used to too, but that's because I'm working.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
Like, it's harder, and you know, I see, I'll be honest, man, I think that rotating tap was kind of the beginning of something that could be super damaging to the scene in terms of everybody trying to run a bunch of stuff, right? Like multiple venues, multiple shows a month, production companies. And, you know, Goldfish Entertainment was in there, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas like running a bunch of stuff, Savage Entertainment runs a bunch of stuff, and other people are trying to do that as well. And I think that, I think it's taking the competition away from comedy and putting it on producing.
Oh, interesting.
Which they're not exactly the same. They're in the same realm. They're in the same industry, but they're totally different things.
Right.
And I think that with time, it could be detrimental to the scene. I don't know that for sure, but if people are all competing to like run a bunch of rooms, I think the quality level might go down. Other stuff could happen. When, you know, until you're doing a certain thing, you should be focusing on being funny on stage, right? Like,
right, right.
Not to say that anybody's doing it wrong or anything, because that's definitely not the case. Everybody, you know, everybody, it's a different path for everybody in comedy. But my personal opinion is like, don't start a comedy show until you have at least 2 years of experience, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's just me. And I'm sure some of the people that are, you know, fairly new that are producing are doing an okay job and getting people there. But the job of producer is butts in seats. The job of comic is make people laugh.
Right.
And so it's like, some people I'm sure can do both within a couple of years, but some might be focusing their energy in the wrong department.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Well, I appreciate you coming on and talking a lot about the production stuff. You know, it's an interesting thing. I don't know. I find it very interesting, and I'm sure the listeners do as well.
Sure.
So we've been, we do the lightning round questions usually with someone who hasn't been on before, you know, and it's all meant to be in fun. One word answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't have to be one word answer, but, you know, first thing off the top of your head, you know?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
All right, all meant to be in fun, all right. who do you think you are?
Steve. I'm Steve. Honestly, I don't know, man. My identity, unlike a lot of comedians, my only identity is a comedian, which is kind of sad. But like, I'm a comedian, and that's my identity, and I don't have anything else going for me.
You still identify more as a comedian than a producer?
Yeah, and I wish more people would do that as well, but, but I can't control that. Yeah.
Because you think that they'd be funnier, or that they would produce less bad shows, or there'd be less bad shows if they...
I think that I get booked more because I have shows to offer rather than because I'm funny. And I would rather be booked because I'm funny.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, that's the holy grail right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Be funny, the holy grail, yeah. What makes you so great?
I have a work ethic that is pretty high compared to a lot of people. I would say that. And also, I don't know, love of the game.
You ain't gonna love it.
I mean, and that's only in comedy. What makes me great outside of comedy is pretty much nothing. Again, I only identify as a comedian. That's my only personality trait.
Well, what's your favorite kind of M&M?
Green.
I think like peanut butter.
I'm allergic to nuts. Oh, so okay. Just plain ass milk chocolate. The green ones. I remember when they introduced only blues. The I liked the blue ones for a while, but I'm back on green.
So you think in color? You're not thinking,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't mean pretzel M&Ms. You say the green or the no? Wait, the pretzel one is the orange one, right? When I think of the pretzel colors, that's I think of the character.
Because of my allergy, I stay away from like a lot of candies. Yeah, so Skittles. That's my favorite M&M color. Gotcha. Fruit flavor.
Yeah, I got a gummies kind of a guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No nuts and gummies.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Safe there. What motivates you?
I don't know, man. Honestly, a lot of the reason I got into comedy is I just want to make people happy. And it's easy to lose track of that in a competitive ass industry.
Yeah.
But yeah, making people happy and success, right? Not having to. I mean, the other thing is like, I don't want to work a day job working for myself. And it is a lot of work, but I'd rather work for myself than somebody else that's going to take all my earnings and keep 80% of it and give me 20, right?
Right.
So making people happy and working for myself, for sure.
Well, I was looking for spite, but yeah, that's cool.
At one point, that was true. I outgrew that phase.
Yeah. It's takes a while. For me, too. I mean, like, that took me. I definitely had that, for sure.
Well, and, you know, publicly, like, we had some beef for a while. Yeah. And
I don't know if we're going to get into that or not.
I'll put a lot of it on me, as I was a dick, and I apologize.
Had a lot of pride.
Yeah. And so, you know, it takes weird times and, you know, harsh events to, like, really realize, like, what matters and what doesn't. And it's like, I don't know why I was ever a dick to you. I'm sorry, but you know, it's like, I'm not sure.
I think, I mean, we have a lot of the similar friends. So a part of me was like, I guess we have to be too similar or something. You know, I'm pushing against some kind of, you know, opposites or not.
Yeah.
Attracting
like,
we're this positive and positive is like
right.
pushing us apart.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm talking magnets here. You get what I'm saying? Yeah,
how
fucking
the fuck
magnets.
Do they work? You know?
I don't know. I thought that was a bad analogy.
No, it was a great analogy. Honestly, it was great. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because it's like, I think it's part of it too. There's probably some age and some maturity stuff in there.
Yeah.
And I think too, like, there's a period of time in comedy that's harder than any other period of time. And Anthony Crawford told me about this. He's like, years 5 through 7 are the most frustrating years you'll ever experience in comedy.
Yeah.
Because it's no longer just like a fun hobby type thing. And it's more like, okay, well, I gotta kind of look at this seriously. And I'm funny, but I'm not getting booked for shit. Right. And so it's like, there's a very frustrating period that comics all go through, for the most part, not all, but like 98% of them go through a very frustrating period of like, I'm trying to grow. And I have growing pains, but I'm not actually growing.
Hmm.
Not to say that that's an excuse or anything.
No,
right?
Yeah. Right? We were focusing on our own thing, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and I do love drama sometimes, you know, I've been trying to get away from that, you know, but, you know.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
I love
yeah,
it too.
It's exciting.
But mostly when it's other people's drama.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
OPD.
Yeah. So, but yeah, we buried the hatchet. It took the pandemic to bury the hatchet.
Yeah.
So that was like, you know. The whole world had to go through something.
Might have been the growing pain we all needed, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people left, so
yeah,
it doesn't seem as, it seems like greener pastures or something, I felt like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting one. That'll be the next podcast, really getting into that pain. Unburying that hatchet and digging it up and doing a postmortem on it. Are you an artist?
I consider comedy to be an art form. I can't draw for shit. I can't sing for shit. I can kind of play guitar a little bit. But I do. I mean, I consider in a weird way stand up to be. I consider all forms of public speaking to be an art form.
Okay.
Poetry, art form, even political speeches, maybe the delivering of it is. Well, it's definitely an art form. And that's how terrible people get into power. But even the people that write it, it's definitely an art form, right?
Right.
Yeah. I'd say anybody that creates is an artist. So, yes.
Okay.
I am an artist.
Yeah, there you go. I was waiting for it. What is art?
Creation.
Okay.
Nice.
Does life imitate art or does art imitate life?
Art imitates life, I think. At least, yeah, I would say so, right? If you look at music, it would be pretty hard to have songs about nothing, right? Like, people write about what they know about, they create about what they know about. For example, you've got this cool, like, broccoli guy on your wall. That's a very cool piece of art. If life ever imitates that art, I'm fucking terrified. I'm running for the hills, you know?
It's art imitating life, I guess. I suppose. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Although it's based off the movie, so I mean, it's a whole circle. It's a whole circle. I mean, we don't have to. This is your answer, not my music. Is it worse to fail at something or never attempt it in the first place?
Never attempt it. Yeah, absolutely. Never attempt it.
What's your go-to sweet?
Ice cream.
Because I was gonna say with the nuts thing, that's a whole another. I mean, that's a big hurdle to have to overcome.
Yeah, I'm pretty limited to my ice cream flavors, but ice cream for sure. I love ice cream.
Go-to flavor.
Chocolate or the coffee and donuts at Sweet Action is my favorite ice cream. Go to anywhere else, cookie dough.
Yeah, cookie dough is a solid one.
Yeah.
So if you're going down to the grocery store aisle,
does ice cream imitate cookies or do cookies imitate ice cream?
So it's pretty good. It's pretty good. So, okay, yeah. So you're going down the aisle, King Supers or whatever, Safeway, whatever grocery store you're going to.
King Supers.
What brand do you go for? Ben and Jerry's guy. You going for a Blue Bunny?
If I can find some grocery stores carry Sweet Action or Little Man.
Right. A lot of them do Sweet Action these days.
Yeah.
Which I am a Little Man fan, so.
I am too. And it's cool to support local, although Little Man is quickly becoming not localized anymore. They're expanding like crazy. But yeah, I mean, I try and support local because they're both amazing ice creams. But if not, Ben & Jerry's for sure. Yeah.
Ben & Jerry's. Yeah, it's my go-to store ice cream for sure.
Yeah.
It makes sense you're a fan of Sweet Action because they do boozy beer or beer-y, boozy ice creams. And I'm not a fan.
I've never actually had them.
Oh, really? Yeah. I would have thought that's your jam.
Never had it.
All right.
Maybe like I'd probably enjoy like a stout ice cream, like something darker, but
like a Guinness.
Yeah. Never had it.
What's your problem?
I got 99 of them. Probably moving right now. I don't know. I would say my biggest problem is letting little shit get to me when I shouldn't. Being stressful myself is like not letting the little things go and caring too much about the little shit. And I think that I think that's been obvious in my comedy career for sure. All the frustrations that I've had, and I think I'm not the only one there. But letting little shit stress me out is not good. It's not healthy. And I try so hard to let go of stuff, and sometimes it just keeps coming back, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, and that's part of the thing about comedy that you just have to learn to deal with. It's like, why didn't I get this one little opportunity, this one tiny little opportunity? And then one day I'll be like, who cares? I'll have another opportunity. And then the next day I'll be like, why didn't I get that one little opportunity?
Yeah, I can eat at you. So we both, you're saying that, you know, we had some public beef and stuff, but I've kind of moved on to a different nemesis.
Ooh.
Sammy Anser, obviously.
Yeah.
Have you moved on to somebody else? Would you care to name them on the spot? Or do you want to?
I
don't know. We're not like super negative or anything.
I'll name names for sure. The thing is like there's truly only two people that I actually hate in comedy because you can't get along with all of your coworkers, no matter your job is, right? And luckily, we were working in an industry with a lot of cool motherfuckers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good positive way to look at it.
There's a few people locally that I don't like to work with, but there are two people that I cannot stand.
All right. I'm not forcing you to say it.
I want, this is public knowledge at this point. I can't stand Kevin Bennett and I can't stand John Locken. Both of those guys just piss me off no matter what.
Right.
And Kevin Bennett is not. It's not like he's ever done anything to me personally. Right. Yeah. It's just
always been nice when I've seen him at mics.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Totally.
To me personally.
It was his online presence. And that's a whole nother side of the coin for comics.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what is your online presence? Kevin Bennett's online presence and contrarian views piss me off. John Locken is the same person on the other side of the political spectrum, but he also talks a lot of shit. So, and that guy, I think, is just a fraud, and he's manipulative, and he's in comedy to take advantage of people rather than do comedy. And I would say that to him, except he blocked me because I was saying stuff like that to him. But other than that, man, I think that the pandemic did help me let go of a lot of the issues I had with some people. And we all need to like let go of that kind of stuff. And I've grown in that sense. Sammy fuck Sammy Anser. I like him. I like Sammy Anser, but just to back you up.
That, oh, well, I appreciate that. And I mean, it's not like a super, super hate, but, you know, he, you know, if anything, if I'm being super honest, you know, it's, he's good at the game, you know?
Yeah. And, and there's some, and
he has gotten funnier. I saw him and I did give him a compliment at Comedy Works because he was hosting. And I was like, okay, I watched his opening set and I was like, that was better than I expected it to be.
Sure. And at some point too, it's like, you gotta just, here's the other thing too, that people need to realize is just because you don't like somebody doesn't mean you can't respect them.
Right. Right.
There's two different things there. I don't know. It's weird because there used to be so many people I disliked, and maybe not so many. And honestly, dude, living with Byron, who disliked everybody, Byron truly disliked everybody. Living with him, I think, helped. Some of that rubbed off on me too, where it was and sometimes he was right. He would point out, he's like, well, this person is doing this. And I would suddenly care about something I didn't care about before.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I really, for the most part, I don't care anymore about, like, the drama is fun, but also, like, I got to work.
Yeah, yeah, at a certain point.
I got to just put my head down and put the blinders on and just keep doing what I'm doing because, at least production-wise, it's working.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, other than that, man, everybody has their own issues, and I think I've opened my mind to, like, people having other shit going on in their lives. And so it's like hard to hate people when you know some of their problems, and or even if you don't know their problems, honestly. Right, yeah.
People are people. And
but if you're John Locken, you better keep my fucking name out of your mouth.
All right. Well, I like to say, you know, it's nice that we've grown. We've both grown, you know, and we can sit down and have a good pod and appreciate it. We've been ending. I do want to end with a pitch for a movie. I think it'll be fun.
Okay.
It'll be fun. We don't have to, you know, write it all out, but, you know, the initial pitch for a movie we'll do together. All right.
Okay, great.
All right. What's your favorite genre?
For the sake of this, horror.
Horror?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually comedy, but
I say, would it be for not the sake of
I feel like writing a comedy about a comedy is too obvious.
No, this is good. I mean, and then I like to, you know, you'll be. Yeah, we'll put you in it somehow. You know, you'll be the kind of main character here.
Uh-oh.
I like the idea of...
Should have said comedy.
Oh, man. There's some stuff there. That's some stuff there. There's two comics that have beef. That could be interesting. You know, it's something you don't
Yeah. Especially as a horror. Yeah.
There's something there. Okay. There could be a horror aspect. So is there like... Is it like a supernatural horror? Or is it going to be like this guy's a serial killer? You... Find out that your nemesis is actually a serial killer, but everyone's like, oh, Steve just being Steve. He's just jelly. This guy's Sammy Andrews actually killing people. And, you know.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Okay, that's a little much, putting his name in there.
I mean, John Locken probably does. I wouldn't be surprised. He at least kills what they... I'm just going back to talking shit, just reverting. I'm like, we've really grown as people. Also... What if John Locken was a murderer who
and we discovered
killed people by selling comedy classes, and then they come to his house and he bury him in the basement?
I mean, we can take out the name, the actual name part, but I think that's a great premise right there.
Yeah, yeah. I think comedy classes is a pretty good spot to start for horror.
Maybe it's a female comic who's doing comedy classes for maybe a community college, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You know, we can work. We're workshopping
she's
here.
She's taking a credit, and she's like, you know, I want to see what this is like, and it's kind of, she thinks it's going to be the easiest way to get her prerequisites done, right?
Right, right.
But she, you know, she's...
She uncovers murder.
She works during the day, so she has to take the nighttime class.
Yeah.
And it's obviously like the fall semester, right? October. October's coming around. It's getting darker earlier. The weather's getting colder. She shows up to class one day, and one of the students is gone.
Okay. Yeah. Someone she'd just been flirting with a little bit, and you might think at the beginning of the movie, like, oh, they could be, you know, this could be the romance of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it's like other horror movies, it's probably a black guy. He's probably the first one to go.
Well, right? I was saying, if we're going to go with the female lead for this one, you could be the guy, the first guy who dies. I like to put the guest in the show.
Because sure.
I don't want you to be the teacher who's murdering people. You know?
No, I don't. I also just like, let me get it over with, right? Like, I'm probably not going to make it.
So we'll let you have one really good set.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning. And then you'll be like, man, I could die happy now. And then like the teacher, we hold on the teacher a little too long.
The teacher's threatened. So he's like, I'm going to, I got to off this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We both write about fucking porta potties a lot. So get his ass.
Some killer porta potty bits.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're
going. I stole his joke. That's what it is. I stole his act. I fed his act on YouTube and just stole it. And everybody liked it when I did it. That would make somebody go into a murderous rage.
Yeah,
I think
that would. Yes, that would. Okay. Yeah. So it's not. It's not that you're a great comic. You stole his act, and now has a personal vendetta against you. Okay. Yeah. All right. So then she starts getting a little. She starts noticing that people are dropping out, but he likes her. So he's kind of grooming her a little bit.
Oh, for sure. For sure. For sure.
He's taking her out to Mike's, taking her to the Comedy Works for a show. Like, hey, let's go on a field trip, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So she starts noticing some stuff here.
Come be on my podcast.
Perfect. Perfect. It's like, I usually don't do this, but, with students right away. But you're so good. You got to get your perspective.
Yep. Yes. Absolutely.
And his podcast room is the murder room.
Yeah, absolutely. A similar setup to your room here.
Yeah, but with a bunch of plastic.
The TV's on the viral video of the first me. It's on the viral video of me after I've been murdered.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, why is that on there?
She's like, wow, I haven't seen a couch covered in plastic since my grandparents' house.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so he's murdering people. Does she get murdered and he just keeps going, kind of American Psycho style? Or does he, because nothing really happens to him at the end of American Psycho, right?
Ultimately, in the end, he does kill her. She finds out that he's doing this, and she's trying to get out to the world. And she's so close, she's uploading the TikTok. But there's a signal TikTok problem. Video. Yeah. And before I can actually upload, he kills her, steals the phone, deletes the TikTok. He goes on to the spring semester to kill more comedy students.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. That's great. I think it's a good
one. What do you think the title would be?
That's what I was gonna say. Well, I said American Psycho, so I was trying to think of something with like Can't Teach Funny, something like that. Mm. Murdered. Comedy's murder, murdering,
killing off stage.
It's not bad. It's
Hacksaw.
Hack is good.
Just hack. Whatever. Just hack.
Hack.
Yeah.
One word titles are popular right now.
Yeah, and I think that also explains the level of material that he was writing.
Right. Yeah. Hack and then colon those who can't teach.
Yeah.
We cast Adam Caden Holland as the teacher.
No, Those Who Can't Teach is the sequel. That's like, okay. That's the number two.
All right.
Instead of just Hack 2, it's like Those Who Can't Teach. That's good.
Okay, who do we cast as the teacher? Adam Caden Holland was a Denver reference, but we could also go.
That's a good question. The teacher would probably be.
Do you want to be a comic or should we go?
That's what I'm trying to figure out in my head.
Ali Wong came to mind.
Ooh. That's it'd probably be Anthony Jeselnik just with his material.
Perfect.
You know?
Anthony Jeselnik is great.
Yeah.
Okay. Who plays the girl?
I think Ali Wong would be good for that. Or,
a little old, young.
Probably Abby from Broad City.
Okay. Yeah. I could believe that.
Yeah.
I could believe that.
She'd be pretty good in a horror, I think.
Also, Ellen's not doing her show anymore. Possible casting for the teacher could be Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, God.
That
that's
would be
terrifying.
Crazy. That would be crazy.
Ellen should definitely be the teacher. Jesus. It's just fucking screaming in her office all the time. Yelling. Like, she's just such
an
asshole to
her assistants.
This is my
soundproof podcast studio. And, like, they can't hear her screaming.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing. The studio's completely soundproof.
Yeah.
No windows. No light. Yeah. I think we're on to something.
Yeah, yeah. And then so the guy who gets murdered, that could maybe, I think Jeselnik's too old to be a student. I think we got to go big. We got to go name. We got to go like Drew Barrymore in Scream, like big, and then they get killed off. We got to go.
Well, I feel like they're going to be like multiple people.
Sure.
I feel like.
But the first guy that she was like,
Hasan Minhaj, probably the first guy. I think he'd be great in a horror movie.
You don't think he looks too old?
No.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. No. Or well, because it's a community college, so it's sure. a lot of older yeah, students,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Could be like an Eric Andre type.
Eric Andre type, I like.
Oh, what I'm thinking of, honestly, is like, well, it's going to be directed by Jordan Peele, right? So whoever he picks, there are like there. I feel like there's some comedy actors that would be great in horror movies.
You like horror, huh?
I'm more into it now than I used to.
Interesting.
But
what is it? You've been through enough pain that you can like relate more?
No, I think that I well, a lot of the reason
I was being dramatic, but.
I mean, I couldn't, like, I'll never watch, like, The Human Centipede, right? That's a horror movie, right?
Right, yeah, yeah. It's
like, that horror. Is just not the kind of horror that I'm...
It's a sub-genre
yeah, in horror. I think that sub-genre is less popular now. Movies are, like, going back to, like, the suspense horrors, right? Like, the,
like gore.
Gore is fine. I'm not huge on gore, but stuff like The Shining. Like, yeah, The Shining, yeah. where it's, like, a suspenseful thriller, but also a horror movie. That's kind of what Jordan Peele's doing now, and it's like why I'm like, I'm way more into that kind of horror than like gory. I have to cut my own leg off saw type stuff,
right? Which you know we're probably gonna have one scene where Ellen, you know, so the girl almost, you know, one student almost gets away from Ellen by chopping her leg off or something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, break a leg.
Ah, oh, perfect. Yes, you got it. Break a leg's the bro yeah. for a title, but Hack is great. Hack's great.
Hack 3 break a leg.
Yeah, that's yeah. it. That's the trilogy right there. Boom. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on. Yeah, I appreciate it. I let the guests sign us off however they see fit. You know, kind of the culmination of this whole experience for you. If you have a catchphrase you like to say, something like that. But I will say Wakanda forever and be excellent to each other.
Steve Vanderploeg, Dutch as fuck, baby.
There it is. And where can people find you if they want to see a Rotating Tap show?
Rotating Tap on Instagram, RotatingTapComedy.com, BlueComedy.com, Slumdog Chillionaire on Instagram. Any of those, you'll find me.
Gotcha. Hit us with that signature sign off one more time.
Dutch as fuck. Thank you.
Thank you.